Before we begin this episode, we would like to say that in the spirit of reconciliation, that we acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to the land, sea and community. We pay our respects to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today. Welcome back to another episode of Spaghettification. I'm the Astropunk.
And I'm Steffi. Today we have with us Emma Barnett, who we've been trying to get for a while, but COVID sort of got in the way. Emma's an astronomer and astronomy educator based in Melbourne, but she hits the road all the time to share the stars with people all over regional Victoria and up into New South Wales. She's the Astronomy Enrichment Programs Coordinator at the Victorian Space Science Education Centre, or VSEC, in Melbourne, and has been setting up astronomy clubs at schools across Victoria. She's also completing a Master of Science in Physics at the University of Melbourne in the field of cultural astronomy. Thanks. Welcome, Emma.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Emma, you grew up in New South Wales. We'll forgive you for that. Before moving to Melbourne,
New South Wales.
Smartest thing you did. Steffi, that's smart too. Can you tell us a bit about your path into astronomy?
Yeah, certainly. For me, it wasn't a direct path of I'm definitely going into astronomy as a career. Where I'm from in Deniliquin, quite rural New South Wales, we didn't really know any scientists or anything like that. There's no scientists around. No one has anything like that in the family. So I was keen to be a science teacher when I went off to uni. I thought that was pretty straightforward. I knew what that would be. But a few years into uni and actually learning a bit more about astronomy and all the different types of science out there, I really enjoyed what I was doing and learning about. And I really wanted to keep that going. But I have always had a little bit of passion for the teaching along the way. So I've kept the tutoring, kept everything I could. And now I've sort of fallen into this nice little middle ground of working in both astronomy and education, which is just where I want to be, I think.
So you teach, well, we work together at actually a few places. So so you teach at Melbourne Uni, but you've had a few different roles now in physics and astronomy education and outreach, with the latest being the Astronomy Enrichment Programs Coordinator at VSEC. What is VSEC and what do you do there?
VSEC, the Victorian Space Science Education Centre, it's a very fun place to work, actually, especially with all the people, but it's one of six specialist STEM centres across Victoria, and it's been operating since 2006, I think. Well, I'm testing my memory now.
I think so.
But basically, it's there to help students engage in STEM, particularly from the area of space. So there's a whole lot of scenario-based space activities and programs that students can do. And what I get to do in particular is a lot of outreach. So I get to visit a lot of Victorian rural and regional schools to do a lot of very particular programs. So there's sort of two areas that I cover there. We have a radio astronomy program that I'd love to talk a bit about as well, and then the rural clubs program. So this rural program is sending me from Mildura to Mallacoota, like every direction you could pick around the state, to give astronomy equipment and STEM equipment to schools, train the teachers and students on using it, and help them build up their own STEM clubs and STEM resources within the school and with whatever support we can provide. And last year, one of those very fun things was a telescope. So each of the schools participating last year got their own very nice telescope. So I got to drive all around the state and have astronomy nights every week, which was an absolutely amazing thing to get paid to do.
I want to ask about the radio astronomy side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So from a school, when you're going to these schools, how do you put together a program on radio astronomy for school students? Because it's not your traditional type of astronomy that most people would know.
No.
And work into. And so at the ASV, we have a very big active radio astronomy section, and something that I can discuss off air with you will be giving you guys or working out how we can get you guys access to our 8.5 meter radio dish that is remotely accessible.
Amazing.
With it's got a hydrogen filter on, a hydrogen line filter on it
yes.
too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
So how do you introduce radio astronomy to kids? Because kids generally aren't into radio astronomy because you can't see anything.
Absolutely. The second you tell these kids about radio astronomy, the very nerds in the room go, that might sound interesting. And everyone else has that sort of glazed over look of, I don't know what you're talking about. So VSAC has our own radio dish, and as far as we know, it's the only one in the world that's exclusively for high school students, so no researcher gets to touch it, which is very fun. And so our students remotely access this telescope. So we have put together a whole huge amount of resources for this so that the schools can do it themselves without me actually having to come visit. So I can send off the material, send off everything they need, train the teachers, and no matter where they are in Victoria, they can access this, get their students using a real radio telescope to point at some very fun hydrogen-based objects in our night sky or our day sky quite often. And so a lot of it is trying to relate it to what students do actually understand about the electromagnetic spectrum and how a telescope might actually work and what they're trying to look at. But it is quite a very flexible program that we have. So it really depends on how the school wants to use it. So that's why I do it from any year, from year 7 up to year 12, sometimes when I'm there in person, sometimes via this sort of outreach model that's remote. But it's absolutely fun that students actually get to see things in radio astronomy for the first time. So I did it just last week with the National Youth Science Forum, and I had students looking at our supermassive black hole at the middle of our galaxy and trying to get them to understand what we're actually looking at in radio when we look at that area of the day sky, actually, which is, yeah, a very fun thing and a way to introduce these students to astronomy just a little bit, just to get their taste buds tingling a little bit on astronomy.
Yeah, and especially since here in Australia we have such a huge radio astronomy sort of research field with the SKA, you know, starting construction, and also the all of the other radio telescopes. Plus, you know, at Melbourne we have people working at South Pole. We talked to Aman a few months ago, and knew he's been working on the South Pole telescope in Antarctica. So definitely something that I feel is like, yeah, as Mark said, not so maybe immediately captivating, but like definitely a really cool thing because there's all that electronics and stuff that goes into it as well that like, you know, you see one of the MWA tiles and maybe you can put one of the photos of it in here, Mark, but, you know, it just looks like a bunch of spiders.
Oh, you know I will.
It's like how does this actually become a telescope? And that's all the electronics that goes into, you know, changing different voltages and things. And it's all the black magic that I wish I'd understood more. Radio astronomers, call me.
I love this whole radio astronomy with kids bit. It's great. Whereas we also have a very active juniors section who hopefully in the near future will be able to get access to our 8.5 meter radio dish as well. They've just finished testing of it and they've started mapping the South Celestial Pole area and the Large Magellanic Cloud as a bit of a test run. The guys in the radio astronomy section. It's
you should get.
And they're doing it's really old school. They're putting like trace on top of the screen and plotting it manually as and then manually colouring it in as it comes up.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
The first time I pointed at the Magellanic Clouds with our radio telescope was just for fun to test. And then I was quietly disappointed that you couldn't really see anything. And then I thought about it for a bit longer and went, that makes sense. I'm only looking at 1420 megahertz. There's not much there.
Yeah.
I don't know what our telescope, what range it's in. That's way above my pay grade.
So I also work at VSEC, but as an educator, not as a coordinator of any of the programs like you do, Emma. And so for an embarrassing long time, like months, I thought that the radio telescope was actually in Melbourne, but it's obviously not. Do you have a few details about where it actually is located?
It's tucked far away. You can come in a few weeks, but we need to go take the slashes and clear out all the grass that's in the way.
That sounds like work. I don't want to do that, actually.
Well, it's only really a bit over an hour away from Melbourne. It's Tallarook, so very nicely sort of in the very middle of Victoria.
I know where
that
is.
So not far from Heathcote, really, and the dark sky site around there, but it's tucked away between a couple of hills that provides a nice little sort of border for radio. So you know, we're blocking enough away from the city and everything else. It's very hard to get phone reception there, but it's a nice little spot for it, very protected.
How big is it? Like, how big is the scope, the dish?
So this one's a 3 meter dish.
Yep.
And so it works quite well for what we do with the students, which is mapping. And so, typically our students get to operate it for maybe 10 minutes minimum, but normally up to an hour or so to take a very nice, decent map of the night sky. Good enough quality for being able to see an object and try to understand a bit about it. Certainly you could get much, much bigger ones, but I think the 3 metres is just perfect for what you need.
Yeah.
So our telescope is all covered by the Victorian Challenge and Enrichment Series. Yep. So it's funding by the Department of Education and Training to run all these special projects and do all these fun activities. So hats off to them for providing us the funding to do this and for continuing it as well into this year, which would be fantastic. We do try and share our material with the Pulse at Parks program as much as possible and get try to find ways that we could link up and share resources because there's so much there. But it is quite overwhelming to try to find a way to put it all together in a neat little package.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to have to introduce you to our radio astronomy section director because I think there will be a way we'll be able to get you guys access for periods of time because it's not used all the time and there will be periods where it can be accessible and why not? I mean, that's what this society is all about anyway. That's our motto actually is to share an understanding of the universe, basically get information out there and teach people. So if you've got a program that's doing that and we can help, then we should be helping. Now, next question. Before that, you worked at Swinburne University as an Astro 3D Education and Outreach Officer. What were some of the things that you did there?
So I got this role right before we went into lockdown and I had it for the 2 years of lockdown. So within Astro 3D, I was part of the team running a lot of our education and outreach activities. And some of that was running the work experience program that they have at Swinburne, which was fantastic to get students from all around the state to take part in research programs with all of the amazing researchers at Swinburne. With COVID, we had to switch online. So basically my job became turning everything I could into an online format. So developing an online work experience program that we ran multiple times throughout the year at Swinburne with an amazing team that dealt with me trying to do all of that in a very quick amount of time. So I think we had about 70 students a year partaking in that, which was amazing. And then I also put together a brief little YouTube series called Astro in the Home, especially for the worst of lockdown during National Science Week in 2020. I was trying to put out a video a day during National Science Week of fun little activities that you could do at home. And so I got a lot of our Astro 3D participants from all around Australia to help film for that. So you could go check that out as well. I think both of those videos are still available there. And that was just my way of trying to find some way of giving people some astronomy at the home because they couldn't go anywhere unless they already had an amazing telescope in the backyard.
I was very lucky in that I had the two kids at home and I've got four telescopes. So most nights were spent in the backyard when it was clear doing astronomy with the kids, absolutely, in particular with my daughter. She loved it.
Oh, that sounds fun.
We also did Wacky Wednesday Science for her class because kids were obviously struggling to go to class. And we would come up with all different sorts of scientific experiments to do. She would come up with them or work out what she wanted to do and I would get the ingredients and we would do it all together. And it was a lot of fun. I got the kids involved. We gave them a lot of tasks to go and do and then come back the next week to let us know how it went. And a lot of them were astronomy related to do with solar systems and planets and that. It was great.
Well, my next question sort of follows up from that and I'm going to expand it from what I wrote down originally. So lockdown was obviously a big deal here in Melbourne. What was it like organising these activities? Like, because it's in astronomy, you know, if we have telescopes, it's reasonably simple, but a lot of it sort of depends on using computers and being up at night and things. So was it sort of easy or was it really difficult to find things to sort of do with your students online and the research that the work experience students were doing?
It was a huge team effort. I'll start with that. There are a lot of random resources out there for astronomy related things online. So learning how to code Python and things like that, you could do anywhere. And if there's enough shared data out there, there's, you know, a lot that you could do. So I tried to access any free material I could for the students, like the raw Hubble image data and things like that, so students could put the images together. And a lot of the researchers just found ways of relating their particular research in a way that the students could do in small groups on their own computers and really break it down to the basics, which is quite important for these kids. And it was just, yeah, it really depended on having a team that could put that time and effort in.
Have you found that, you know, being able to do things in person again has, so I've tried to take, you know, when I'm planning classes, what worked well as like an in-person sort of thing and what worked well online and try and mix them together because, you know, it's like we're 2 years and we did a lot of stuff during that time to sort of make things happen. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to disregard that. So have you found like, you know, just being back in person is more of a relief and, you know, we can just go back to how things were? Or are you trying to continue doing remote things as well, especially since you work with regional schools?
Well, I think that's the thing. A lot of the stuff that I did, both at my Swinburne role, but also at my mm-hmm. Uni of Melbourne role that I haven't really talked about much yet, all the resources I built with that, I am slowly trying to feed this into what I'm doing now with these VSEC schools because for a lot of them, they can't come to Melbourne or anywhere like that to take part in all these fun activities in person. So a lot of that material can be reformatted to a perfect experience for our regional and remote communities, which would be an amazing thing if we could keep working on that because we put so much time and effort into developing something that we've done online. It might as well go out there and keep being amazingly useful.
All right. So next one, next question. I'm going to read it first before I read it out. Okay. You're currently working on a Master of Science in Physics at the University of Melbourne, doing a bit of a special project. Can you tell us about it?
So along with lockdown and my role at Swinburne, I also had a job at Melbourne Uni where I was basically a TA for 2 years for a lot of the first year physics subjects. And in doing that, I've realised I really did enjoy a lot of astronomy teaching and everything like that, but I also got a little bit of flavour of Indigenous astronomy. So within the field of cultural astronomy at Melbourne Uni, there are particular teams working on Indigenous astronomy. But because I'm trying to fit in astronomy and education and a bit of Indigenous knowledge, my master's project is now working on an Indigenous astronomy program that can be delivered to schools and run by the teachers themselves. So I'm trying to put all the resources and things together in a neat little package that schools can do. And so my master's is on developing that, packaging off, providing it to a school and running it with them and seeing how well that works and what could be done in the future for these kind of astronomy education programs. Especially as someone that's non-Indigenous, I'm trying to come at it as respectfully as I can, but also in a way where I know a lot of the struggles teachers are having at the moment with the amount of time and everything else they can do. I'm just trying to feed everything, every little bit of knowledge I've got into a way that our teachers can actually run this themselves.
So with your program, is it designed to be more where the students do their own experiments and sort of work on Indigenous ways of knowing sort of for themselves, or would it be more of a researching sort of project that they're doing?
So what I'm trying to do is repackage some of the Indigenous curriculum materials that Melbourne Uni mm-hmm. developed a few years ago.
Yeah.
Link in description. I'll add that for anyone that's interested. But there's a lot of material already out there that researchers like Duane have worked with communities to get as much knowledge as they can and find a way of fitting it in with the Australian curriculum. And so what I'm trying to do is find activities that help explore that. So it's even something as simple as stellarium, which a lot of astronomers are familiar with and a lot of teachers are getting more familiar with. There's a lot of resources in there to use stellarium in a way to help teach Indigenous astronomy. And so I'm trying to make sure that teachers are still respecting this as its own science and not just a branch of history or art or something like that. It's all one and the same. And so it's a matter of trying to find all these particular activities that really suit the classroom and help kids be engaged in that material as well.
With the new physics curriculum starting this year, there's also a focus on Indigenous knowledge in the physics curriculum. So I think it really ties nicely in there with some of the options that you can choose to look into.
I actually gave a presentation last year to some teachers about the new study design and ways that they could fit Indigenous knowledge in as one of those options. And it looks like there's a few people out there that are hoping to take this on, and so more people that try it out, we find out what works and what doesn't work as a whole team, we'll be able to find out a way to keep this all in well.
So I was just going to ask about that with the curriculum, with what you're putting in there. Does it go into Indigenous stories as well? So we're covering off Indigenous stories to do with the night sky and, you know, the emu and Bunjil the possum and those sorts of things?
Yeah, certainly. So following on from that the UniMel resources that were put together. It really depends on what age range you're working with. Mm-hmm. So for some ages, it's really great to just think about the emu in the sky and looking at seasons perhaps and things like that. The seasons are very important in astronomy and they're mm-hmm. mentioned in part of the curriculum as well. And in some of the later ones, you can make it a bit more specific. So getting them thinking about the mathematics behind it all or looking at, like location and geography and trying to understand all of that from a science perspective. And so you could get things like the Seven Sisters storyline and look at the history in that way and also compare that to sort of the Western understanding of these constellations. There's a bit of an interesting mix, really, between embedding stories from particular areas of the night sky or anything like that, as well as the science and everything else.
And are you, I know you're talking about Duane before, but are you also seeking advice from the actual Indigenous community? Are you seeking advice to make sure that what you are putting together is reflective?
Yeah, of course. And so what I'm trying to do is not trying to create everything completely from scratch. I'm trying to use the resources that a lot of Indigenous people have already put together themselves and consented for that material to be shared as much as possible. So I'm trying to, it's very difficult to fit all of this in within a master's. But yes, I'm trying to work with Indigenous people as well to make sure that everything that I'm using is best as possible.
Hopefully in a year or two we'll be able to hear more about this.
I'm actually looking forward to it. Is it, obviously this is going to be something that as your masters we're going to be able to access and read?
Theoretically. It'll be a master's thesis by the end of the year, I hope. Mm-hmm. Can share that around. But there's also going to be other people working in this field. So the Cultural Astronomy Group at Melbourne Uni and everyone else that's working on this. So right now there's so much happening. It's going to be a huge period of growth for putting Indigenous astronomy back into the curriculum and things like that. So keep an eye out on it all.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear. It's very exciting, that's for sure. Next question.
Yeah, one that I'm really looking forward to hearing what you tell us. What's your favourite experience so far working in astronomy or in astronomy education?
Oh, my gosh, that's a kick in the question. I think lately, because coming from a rural background and struggling to understand what a career in astronomy could have been, one of my favourite things is going to these small rural communities and having an astronomy night and just, even if it's only a handful of students that really latch onto it, it's amazing to just see how their passion changes over the course of that night. They come in a little bit curious and you give them some fun little facts, you let them play with the telescope, you let them actually explore things, and it's just getting them like seeing that understanding in their eye and hearing the smallest fun little comments of like, oh, Saturn's real. That's actually Saturn. yes, it is. It's just that little twist where you go, I think they've hit that little bit of inspiration. They could go in the field of astronomy in the future. They may not. That's absolutely fine.
Isn't Saturn just like the most amazing thing to show somebody for the very first time? I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, I swear someone had just drawn a picture and popped it on the end of the telescope. It was just the most amazing thing to see. And I know when I do public outreach and I show people Saturn, the amount of like jaw-dropping wows that you get just showing Saturn, it's enough. It is enough for a lot of people to just go, I want to do astronomy now. It's such a beautiful object to look at. And
For what I do with these students, when I'm visiting these rural schools, a lot of it is trying to get them to understand what they're actually looking at, because something like the planets is absolutely beautiful. Everyone wants to look at a planet, and Saturn's the best one, so Jupiter. But it's I like to have these little ways of explaining what they're seeing. So the first thing students want to do with the telescope is point it at the night sky and look at a star, and they look down the telescope and go, oh, it's just a star. Yes, it is. But there's a couple of ways I found to try and explain what they're actually looking at. And my favourite thing to do with that is to point at Alpha Centauri, because a lot of students that are particularly space knowledgeable will go, oh, yes, it's our closest star, yada, yada, yada. And they go, okay, great, but there's actually three stars there. And I take them down through a little bit of mathematics. I might throw it at you to see if it can blow people's minds, but maybe not. So I like to break it down to set one astronomical unit all the way down to 1 meter. Very straightforward. It means the sun will be about 1 centimeter and Earth is going to be a meter away and about as wide as a human hair. So then our next closest star is Proxima Centauri, which is just in front of Alpha Centauri A and B. It would be, in this model, 269 kilometres away.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Sun, this is the Earth, the next closest star is 269 kilometres away. And then Alpha Centauri A and B, a binary star system, would be 278 kilometres away, and they'd be about 23 centimetres apart. So you'd have two more marbles, 278 kilometres away from here, 20 centimetres apart, and yet with a telescope we can separate them.
Yep.
Just by eye it looks like one dot, but if you get the right telescope set up, which is often what my students use, you don't need something fancy, you just separate that light, and it's being able to understand exactly what you're looking at that makes it so fascinating. And that's the bit that gets me with these rural students when they can see that and they start to try to comprehend everything that's happening. That's an absolutely amazing thing. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the solar system walk along Port Phillip.
Yeah, yeah.
So from the sun to the next star is, from memory, I think I've been told this a million times by Barry Cleland and I should remember it. Pretty sure it's exactly one revolution around the Earth back to...
Oh.
Based on the scale of that walk.
Terrifying to think about, but trying to put it in a perspective that we can actually comprehend is.
I know. Yeah, I mean, and that, to me, like, it's like threading the needle of a putting a thread through a needle. Just that, just looks that close. Do any of the students get into astrophotography by any chance?
Some of them do. So part of the telescope kits we gave out last year included astronomy cameras, just a very basic model, a planetary camera really. So part of this year we'll be going back to those schools and trying to really train people up on using those, just learning how to control the go-to mount and everything was enough last year. But there are quite a few students that are quite interested in astrophotography. So either some students that already have their own little system at home that they like to test out and others that might be using these ones as well. There's quite a few out there across regional and rural Victoria because it's perfect skies. It's amazing when the weather's being nice. It's, fantastic place for that hobby.
Yeah, I was literally just thinking that, like, it must be, like, you know, definitely some kids would have already gotten into it because, you know, if you've got access to skies like that all the time.
Well, that's the thing. These students are often, they're at a huge disadvantage for how far away they are for everything else to do with science and STEM and everything. But astronomy is the one thing that they can have much more advantages of than everyone else living in Melbourne like us. And why I love going back home to see my parents because I can see the small and large Magellanic clouds from the veranda. I don't have to go far away to see that. It's amazing.
They've got, but they don't have generally access to the equipment. That's the catch, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's good to see that they're getting access to the equipment. Well, it's good to see that all kids are getting access to the equipment, really. I'm going to throw a question in that's not on here, Stephanie. That's all right. I want to know where you see the future of science for kids or for outreach for the youth and, you know, where you see it heading from that point of view. Like,
interesting. knowing all the little politics behind the scenes and everything. there's a bit of a difference between where I'd love to see it go and where I think it's going, but it's heading in the right way. So I think
We'll break it then. Where would you love to see it go first? And then following on from that, where is it heading?
I think I'd love to see more student-led investigations out there. So letting the students take charge of what's happening. So if they're exploring something like astronomy, letting the kids bring their natural curiosity into it rather than just being told this is what you have to do. Letting them explore that a little bit more. And I think with all the equipment that's getting out there and all the resources that are available, it's starting to get that way. But I do think there is so much more, like right now, there's so much more hands-on science that isn't just lab work. And that's what's amazing to see. So one of my favourite things to do with these rural schools is to also take along all our rocket launching kits and just have an amazing day designing rockets, launching them out of nowhere, having so much fun with it. But just getting to feed in that science along the way, and I think that's where a lot of it's heading at the moment, which is fantastic. But there is that weird blend of so much online resources and online material now that students are probably going to be a lot more computer literate than we were growing up, but it might be very specific ways, I guess. So I'm hoping that we do have a generation that's really great at coding and everything else that we might need, but who knows where that's going to go.
And where is the future heading, actually heading?
Yeah, that's a rough one. I don't know. I do see quite a big distinction between our metropolitan schools and our regional and rural mm-hmm. schools, because our metro schools are getting so much more access to resources and everything, which is amazing. And so I think we are getting a lot of science literate students in our metropolitan schools, but I do think there is a significant lag for our regional rural students because they don't have those resources. So I think where we're heading at the moment is more scientifically literate. We're getting access to amazing things, but I think we're actually starting to spread that divide a little bit, unfortunately. And so, yes, there are amazing organisations out there trying to do everything they can to fill that gap, but I can actually see that, yeah, as something that I'm a little bit worried about for where we're heading.
All right, I'm going to continue on this path now because it's a good path.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
How definitely. Would you go about fixing that gap that is, like, is there anything yeah. we can do to fix that gap?
Pressure. Well, there are things like the new tech schools that are being built up around Victoria, which is great because not all of them are in, like, very, very metro areas. But there's a lot more work to be done there to be able to reach as far as possible. It's always a matter of as much funding as you can get to get teachers to these areas, to give them the time and the funding to do everything they'd like to do. So, yeah, if every school out there could buy a telescope, I'd be happy. I'd be done. But that's not what's going to happen.
So what about if there was a way that and I'm throwing the ASV in there only because I'm so heavily involved in it. What if there was a way that organisations like in Victoria, the ASV, Mornington Peninsula Astronomical Society, Ballarat Astronomy, Astronomical Geelong. Society of Geelong, Mount Burnett, what if there was a way that these organisations, they're all not-for-profits, they're all set up to sort of like to teach the public about astronomy. What if there was a way that these organisations could get themselves involved in STEAM projects with your organisation and get, because, and I say this because we have a site north of Heathcote where we are currently going through the process of putting two remote telescopes on site. We have an 8.5 meter radio dish. We have all of this equipment that our members aren't going to be able to use 24/7 that we can give access to remotely. And we're not the only one. You know, there's the Astronomical Society of New South Wales, which has multiple sites as well. So from my way of thinking, I'm a big picture guy. I look at the problem you're talking about and I go, well, there's possibly a solution there from the point of view of all these not-for-profits that work in astronomy. And in Western Australia, you've got Perth Observatory, who are not-for-profit as well. They do a great job with schools and outreach and things like that. The East Coast is falling a bit behind what they're doing. We're playing a bit of catch-up. You know, we have the sites, we have the equipment, and all the equipment is coming on board. And if the ASV, for instance, worked with the local governments or with council or with state government to get some of this stuff up and running, we've got the guys with the expertise to help teach and help run these things as well. And we'd be more than happy to be involved in that, I reckon. And I don't know if I took that to the society and said, this is what we could do and this is how, you know, here's a long-term goal we can be a part of, a long-term project. We'd be all in with it, I reckon.
Mm. That's the thing. It's a massive problem that you're not going to solve with one solution, but it could be just a small part of it, absolutely. And one thing I'm conscious of with a lot of the work that I do, that a lot of the time these resources are absolutely utilised by the kids that are passionate about it, which is fantastic, but it is a matter of trying to reach those students that just don't know about it, that don't know about astronomy very well or anything like that, and so aren't going to go hunting for things like that to do in their spare time or anything like that. So it's really a matter of trying to reach them in the classroom to get that first little bit of curiosity, and that's sort of the most difficult bit. So it would be amazing to collaborate even further, and there is already a lot of collaborations out there, which are great to see, that are slowly helping to fill this void a little bit. But, yeah, I'm always happy to work with whoever I can to fix this sort of problem because, as I say, well, yeah, the rural and regional issue is big thing in my heart here. So, yeah.
Well, I'm putting the ASV's hand up. I really am.
Sounds good.
I absolutely. We'll talk off air about it, but there's a lot I think that we as a society can and should offer, that's for sure. access to a lot of equipments, but not just that, but helping you guys out when you go to the school, these regional schools. We've got regional members. We have regional sections. We have a Bendigo group. We have a Heathcote group. We have a Shepparton group. And all these guys all do sidewalk astronomy for us in their local areas. And they're all willing to go to schools and help out if that's the case. You know, that's not an issue. They've got the knowledge. We've got the equipment. We should be doing more.
Yep, no, that sounds amazing. I like it. Good way to start off 2023.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Steph, we can get back onto normal.
No, that's okay. I just got excited. No, that's good. I was just going to say that Emma and I have talked a lot about because, you know, we all work in different places in the same sort of area and, you know, just not duplicating the same efforts is a thing that we would like to do, you know. And, you know, there's all sorts of things happening at ScienceWorks and, you know, again, we get school kids coming in every day to visit the planetarium. So we've talked a bit about what you do for work. What do you like to do when you're not working or when you're not observing the stars? Any particular hobbies, et cetera, that you want to tell us about? I have one more question after this as well. So,
yeah. Oh, big bit of thunder there. In my spare time, I guess I am still a bit of an astronomy nerd, so I'll read lots of books and I'll mm-hmm. – I mean, if I'm out with my friends, at least once in the night I'll just stand outside and go, "Hey, mm-hmm. Jupiter." Always. But, no, I love being a little homebody and binging my Netflix and relaxing at home because I think with all of the work with travel around the state and work with kids and then my master's, there's a lot going on. And I love nothing more than relaxing at home. And even though I do it a lot, I still love to travel quite a lot as well. So seeing lots of rural Victoria and things like that on my own time, love that as well.
Lovely. And do you want to brag about this big grant that you've gotten or is that secret?
Well, that's just continuing on the same program for another 3 years. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you want to brag
about it then? Tell us about
how much you got.
So the two programs that I'm working with for VSEC, the radio astronomy and the rural program, we got a grant to continue it for 3 more years and who knows what will continue after that. So I'll be working specifically in this role for 3 years to build up our radio astronomy program, possibly replace a lot of parts because it's been in use for a while, and hopefully collaborate with a lot more radio observatories around Australia. And then our rural program we're hoping to build out to even more schools, but it's specifically with providing more resources for everyday classroom things. So things like the Water Rockets, which is a fantastic fun little program to do and just provide resources they can do for that. And our CANSAT program as well, which is quite fun, where students, they get to, we developed it in collaboration with the Australian Space Agency and they've been a few different versions around the world, but basically students build, code and then launch their own little satellites that are like the size of a Coke can. And then it collects data on the way down, which is quite fun to do as like a whole day program. But yeah, that's going to be part of it as well. So I'm very excited to get out and do that.
So CAMSATs, that's like little teeny tiny, so you're talking like CubeSat type things?
Yeah, so smaller than a CubeSat. So CubeSat.
Smaller than a CubeSat.
A CANSAT is the size of a Coke can, or typically even the like the CANSAT. Smaller Coke cans as well. Yeah, so CANSAT, CAN satellite. Yeah, we typically build them at the schools and we bring a drone along and launch them for them. So they do just like fall to the ground with their parachute and they're collecting lots of data on the way down that the students can analyse later. So temperature, humidity, force and acceleration, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
That's cool.
I was never one of those kids that really wanted to be an astronaut. I wanted to be an astronomer, but working at VSEC where it's all space science and planetary science, I'm really like into the, you know, looking at what we're doing with the Australian Space Agency and things, and it's like, oh, this is really cool.
VSEC's such a fun place to try to not tell people too much about what we've got going on.
Yeah,
you just want people to come and look at it themselves because it's so fun.
Yeah, so definitely.
Can we go back to VSEC a little bit? And I'm a little bit more curious about what happens in, like, is there's stuff obviously that happens in building there. How do schools, like, I suppose it's more along the lines of, do you guys chase schools to come and do programs, or do they come to you to do these programs, or like?
So VSEC has a huge range of programs. So some of our biggest ones are based around the mission to Mars, and we have that at primary and secondary level, and that's almost always booked out for the entire year. So schools yep. often reach out to us and book that the year before. But if any school out there is interested, absolutely go research it on the VSEC website, because it's so fun, even as yeah. educators, it's very, very fun. Mm-hmm. But there's a bit of a variety of programs. So things like VCE chemistry, they do a lot of things with primary school students that are just ways of investigating science and a bit more hands-on. So these schools come to us and we do a whole day basically with them with lots of different activities. And we do have some where we travel to schools as well, other than just the programs that I do. There's a lot going on. I try not to give too much away, because it's just so fun to see firsthand yourself. But yeah, it's basically hands-on fun space activities.
Can we organise an adults version of it?
I really want to. I'd love to do that, but... Government-funded school, it'd be difficult.
Damn. Yeah. That sounds so very cool. I mean, that's something I would do, but I'm a big kid anyway, so I'm going back to primary school so I can do it.
If anyone else is really interested in trying to fill that void for regional and rural Victorian students, especially in astronomy, reach out to me. I'm always happy to hear whatever we could do. It's just there's so many people working on it, and I'm very excited to see what's going to happen over the next few years, absolutely, with like the collaborations between what we've all done over COVID that's now spreading out there and all the different people working. I'm very excited for what this next couple of years are going to bring.
Oh, I'm excited to see what I can do to help out now as well, that's for sure. it's an area that I have a lot of passion for, that's for sure. That's like I just... Whatever I can do to share the night sky and get people interested in the night sky and therefore into astronomy and astrophysics. I mean, it's not something I'm ever going to do myself because I'm not built that way, but getting people into that, I can do that, and I want to do that more. So I'm absolutely going to reach out and see what I can do to help get your program out there further and further.
Oh, that's awesome. Great to hear.
So I think it's now time for the pop quiz.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay.
First question is me. Oh, well, Steph, I'll let you introduce the topic and then I'll ask the question.
So regular listeners will know that the topic begins with the first letter of your name, which is Emma. So I chose extremophiles for you.
Okay.
Which I, as I was writing questions,
I don't even know what they are.
Ah, well...
We're going to find out, question, though.
We will find out. Yes.
Yeah, we will find out. Yes, yes. I'm looking and I'm like, extremophiles. Oh, that sounds like me.
I was really expecting something like eggs, and I was like, I've got some country knowledge. I'll be good. Like,
we did maple syrup for Maddie Marshall because she's in Canada now, and she didn't do very well.
No, she didn't. Unfortunately. We did sea cucumbers for Sarah, and she has studied sea cucumbers, and that was an abysmal failure on our part.
That's why she's okay.
That's why she's leading. She's on like 4 or 4.5 or something out of 5. So it's going to take a bit to beat her. But
we should mark in this spreadsheet that we're both looking at which questions people actually get right.
We absolutely should like that.
Well, I don't know why we haven't done that yet. Anyway.
We haven't done that because I have the attention span of a goldfish.
I have a slightly longer attention span, but I also haven't done it. So anyway.
All right. Question one. What are some of the extreme conditions that extremophiles can survive in?
Are extremophiles non-human?
Yes. Oh, we can't give you hints. Oh, damn it.
Well, that's where I was going with. I'm guessing non-human.
All right. Extremophiles are non-human because I can't be one, but if there was a human form of extremophile, it would be me.
So now I'm thinking things like our tardigrades and stuff. So you got extremes of vacuum space and very, very, very low temperature. Other ones with very, very high acidity, I guess, especially like the ones deep under the ocean is where I'm getting with. High acidity, high alkaline environments, low oxygen, I guess, in some of those ones as well.
I think there's many different sorts. So you covered basically all of them anyway.
Yeah, I think you've covered it. Found in very hot, cold, acidic, basic, high radiation and high pressure environments. It's non-human form me.
Why are you in high radiation environments?
Not high radiation. Well, when I'm outside in the sun up at Heathcote, that's true. High radiation. And that's very hot as well in summer. And it's also very cold in winter.
Mm.
And I live in high pressure environments too. So, there we go. I am an extremophile. Cool.
I'm going to.
Yes, one right point.
Next to this. Correct.
Yes, mark it down.
Hooray. You're officially on the leaderboard now because you understand about leaderboard. All right, second question. What sort of environment does a hyperpesophile like?
Hyper or hypo?
Hyperpesophile.
Oh, gosh, what is peso? Oh, no.
This is one where I was like, your knowledge of physics may actually help you here. But
yeah. I'm thinking it's going to be something that's just twitching the back of my mind, but I'm trying to think of Latin terminology and nothing's coming to me. Let's go with incredibly salty.
Close. Salty is actually a halophile. So halite is like salt. So hyperpesophile have optimal growth at pressures above 50 megapascals or 490 atmospheres. So piezoelectric is like things that get electric at pressure. Yes.
Oh, yep. Okay.
I thought that was a good word. What?
I'm just going to sit here with a look of confusion on my face.
I don't know if I would have thought of that if I had heard the word. So probably works better in text.
All right. So can you put a big, massive, giant cross next to that one? Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair.
Nah, zero points. It's all right. Yeah. You can still equal. It's all good. Why can tardigrades, a type of extremophile, survive in many different environments?
Oh, no. Why? That is a good question.
Yeah, we know. We know. That's why we asked it.
They are incredibly small. They have a very nice armor-like body or something like that. No, they don't. This is a good question. Is it something along the lines of that they can basically survive with like almost no heart rate, almost no nothing, and just sleep?
That's pretty good. I'm going to give that.
Yeah. I think we can work with that. They have the ability to temporarily suspend their metabolism, which is sleep like a bear, I guess. Yeah. That's why they look like those cute, funny bears, isn't it?
I think that's a coincidence, but they are called water bears.
Yeah, they are called water bears, yeah. When conditions are not fit for survival, this process is called cryptobiosis. I got that word. And allows tardigrades to enter a state that will allow them to survive conditions such as extreme desiccation, lack of oxygen, extreme cold, low pressure, and high levels of toxin or radiation.
Very nice.
Okay. Close enough? Yeah.
Close enough. No, you get a point for that, absolutely. It was more than close enough.
All right, next question, second last. Acetobacter was discovered in the 1800s. What do they convert alcohol into?
Acetic acid?
Yeah. acetic acid or vinegar.
Paying attention to the words this time.
Yeah. You might have noticed I went through that pretty quickly. they are used in the production of vinegar and other acetates. Acetobacter, I think it's acetic, actually makes carbon dioxide as well, which is part of what makes various things fizzy.
Interesting. Cool.
All right. We're up to the last question.
Ooh.
Why are extremophiles important in astrobiology?
Oh, astrobiology. All right. This is B-sec to a T, isn't it? I guess finding ways for alien life to possibly live in other conditions other than our own, and also for the future of space travel and figuring out ways that we could survive elsewhere. They're sort of the two things that come to mind, I guess.
Well, one of those was right, and it was the second part. They help study how life might have evolved in extreme environments of the early Earth or on other planets. So, sorry, it was the first part, not the second part. But I suppose it could teach us how we could survive on other planets too. So really, both are right anyway.
Yeah.
So yay. I think you're equal.
I didn't do horribly.
Yeah.
4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll take that.
Well, I got 1 out of 5 for The Simpsons, and Mark got 0 out of 5 for Murder, She Wrote. So.
Murder, She Wrote. The only thing I can ever get right about Murder, She Wrote is that the lady who plays Angela Lansbury looks like my grandmother. Like that's it. That's all I got.
I don't think that's going to be a trivia question anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either. Well, Emma, it has been absolutely wonderful to have you along for the spaghettification ride. Hopefully we stretched the understanding of people's universe. Mm-hmm. Wow, that was a good – I threw that one in nicely, didn't I?
Yeah, that was very good.
Whoa. Keep that one in the edit. But, yeah, thank you very much for joining us. It's been wonderful. And I really do think that there is a lot that there's some of the – well, a lot of the not-for-profit astronomy organizations around the country can offer, I guess, VSEC. They can offer VSEC and assist them with, and I think it should happen. And I am absolutely going to champion that and try and make that happen for you, because I think what you're doing is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And that comes from the father of two children who have very inquisitive minds when it comes to the world around them.
Yeah, I absolutely love that I sort of ended up in this neat little intermediate space between astronomy and education and outreach, but I'm very much looking forward to what the next couple of years are going to provide.